Blue Wire.
Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
Welcome in to the Rebuild Podcast. My name is Meredith Kane, pinch hitting in this week. The Browns just got off of a rough game at home against the Seattle Seahawks. Baker Mayfield went 22 for 37. He had 249 yards and three interceptions. Not great. Odell Beckham Jr. targeted 11 times, six receptions, 101 yards, but no touchdowns. Ricky Seals-Jones had a decent game himself, was targeted six times, got three receptions. His longest reception was 31 yards, and he had a single touchdown. Although I will say Baker Mayfield, I believe, got his first rushing touchdown of his NFL career, which I've said before, and I'll say it again, I'd like to see a little bit more, but they're just outplayed, outcoached, out everythinged by the Seahawks. I don't even know if everything is a word, but joining me on the Rebuild today, Brittany Mollis, to help maybe talk me down off of a ledge after that game.
That's what Brittany, I'm here for. Yeah. This is my sweet spot, Meredith.
It's
coming
to
shine all the positivity out there. We're good.
Or try to. I mean, it's really, really hard to be positive after that game because it just, everything it felt like went wrong. And that's kind of, that's how a lot of these games have felt so far, with the exception of the game against the Ravens. You're just looking at everything and it's like everything feels like it's going wrong. I mean, we have a lot of positives that came out of the Chargers game because they hung in really well with that and only lost by a touchdown. But it's just been, it has been a rough season. The Browns are going into the bye week 2-4, and then they come out swinging and have to play a 425 game against the Patriots.
Yeah.
So that is what we're looking at with the Cleveland Browns so far. So what are your, since you're Little Miss Positivity, and we love you for it. So that was one of the things you said that you were going to do. So I want to hear your positives from today's game.
Well, I just added one. I thought of one just now that I want to share too.
Okay.
So the first positive, and I think really this is the most important, compared to Jameis Winston, Baker had a really good game. I just want to say, because I hate Jameis Winston so much.
God, that's so hard. That's so unfair, though.
Connect the dots here.
Oh,
just
God.
Hear me
compared
out.
Compared to Jameis Winston,
no,
I was watching that game.
I want to talk about it because I wasn't, obviously. I would never watch him do anything. But he had 400 yards and five interceptions. Like, how does that happen?
I mean, Baker Mayfield had three interceptions. So, I mean, it wasn't quite as many, but it was just... It was ugly and it was rough. One of the things I do feel like he's doing is he is trying to force the ball into OBJ's hands more,
yeah.
Which I think a lot of people have been shouting for and pounding the table because, you know, we traded for Odell Beckham Jr. for a reason and they want to see him being used, and that's fair. But I think you also have to be smart about where you're putting the ball. And after the game, Baker said that it was a combination of wanting to get Odell more touches, but also with the way the Seattle's defense was playing up against the Browns. And I don't know if I buy that. Might call BS on that. I think that it was straight up just trying to get the ball to OBJ a little bit more. You know, I think Nick Chubb, I want to say he got 16 touches in this game. And quite honestly, it's gotten to the point where I just like threw my stat sheet on the ground because I'm so angry. It's like gotten to the point where I feel like it's just like, let's just hand it to Nick Chubb as much as possible. Like, yeah. I know we're paying Odell Beckham Jr. a lot of money. I know Jarvis Landry is being paid a lot of money, but we have seen in the past six games that they are valuable on the field outside of just catching footballs. So,
yes.
Like, just don't, I don't know, don't force a play that's not there. And I think that's been really frustrating. A lot of the play calling was really questionable, too. Feel like Freddie might be in a little bit over his head. I think, and I was thinking about this on the way home from the stadium. I was driving home and think about Freddie a lot. He's on my mind quite a bit. Sup, Fred?
Ooh,
but
hello.
I think he's trying to get too cute with the play calling. I think, honestly, if he just really got back down to basics, mm-hmm. I think this team would be a lot more successful, because there's something about Baker that just looks off. Completely. Like, and I think a lot of people have been noticing that. They've noticed him kind of panicking in the pocket. They notice him kind of stepping back and like dropping back all the way into Lake Erie to try and make a pass. And, you know, the stats were pretty damning up until today that I think he had a 0% completion rate when he held onto the ball for longer than 2 seconds. But it just feels like those plays were just designed for these long balls and these like deep passes, which just doesn't seem to be within Baker's comfort zone. So I don't know what's going on with him. There's something, and just everything feels off with him. Everything feels off with the Browns. And I feel like it comes back to Freddie. I think that he is in a little bit over his head, and I think he just kind of needs to take a step back and get back to basics, because, you know, here's the thing. Nick Chubb knows how to run. Odell Beckham Jr. knows how to catch. Baker knows how to pass. Use it. Those are your weapons. This team is way, way too talented to be 2-6 right, or to be 2-4 right now.
Right. No, 100%. And one of the things I'm still kind of confused about when it comes to Freddie, and granted, today was better. I thought, you know, for the most part, the play calling was better than it has been. You got Odell. Yeah, well, hear me out. You got Odell more involved.
I'll just speak.
you threw to him more, which was important. He had, you know, over 100 yards, so that was good. One of the things that I saw people getting upset about, and it's warranted, you know, obviously I'm an Odell stan and that's fine, but
which is allowed. Yeah, like it's hard not to be an Odell
right
stan.
I mean, I have to, but it's unusual that like he's so able to make these phenomenal catches that like only he can make, but then these easy throws to Baker and he just like they go right through his hand or he just misses them completely, and that's confusing and that's frustrating because you don't expect, you know, your superstar wide receiver to drop these. And I don't know like the explanation for it. With Baker, do you believe in the sophomore slump? Do you think that's a real thing?
I don't know if it's necessarily a sophomore slump. I think it comes back to just something's not right. And obviously he got a little hurt today. His hip got a little banged up, and I don't really know what the extent of that injury is. He went back to the locker room at some point, but he didn't miss a snap. He came back out and he played the full game, and after the game he said it was a little tender, as I think what the quote was. But you know, Freddie said it himself, you know, if Baker's healthy, he's playing. So I trust Freddie in that sense to not put in an injured Baker, because last week at the end of the 49ers game, they put in Gilbert at some point. So, you know, if Freddie feels like Baker needs to be pulled, he'll pull him. So if for one of the few things I will trust in Freddie on that one, if he says that, you know, he's going to put in Baker if he's healthy. So I'm hoping that, you know, maybe it was just a little banged up. Baker didn't get sacked in this game, which is a good thing. But, you know, it's still took a few hard hits. But there's a few very questionable things that Freddie did that were just very frustrating. Now, first off, when they're, you know, at third and goal and they have, I don't know, some kind of, and he throws a slant or I don't know what it was, but yeah, you're throwing on third and goal when you're, you know, at the 1 yard line, and like, like, why are you doing that? Like, there were,
and that whole sequence of events took like 12 minutes to like,
the whole thing.
Will this never end? I don't know. My problem with that whole thing is, you know, Nick Chubb is doing such a good job, and Freddie decided out of nowhere, okay, we're just going to stop using him for this extended period of time, which didn't make any sense. I was like, that was working. So, you know, they had the 26 lead. Why didn't you just stick with it? But, you know, for whatever reason, he decided he needed to do that. But then, you know, when it got to the third and one and, you know, or third and goal at the 1 yard line, and then the whole, you know, let's challenge it, which, whatever, like Jarvis, yeah, it did look like he got in for the touchdown, but like we were already there, we were doing it over, like Nick Chubb ran it in.
Nick Chubb got, yeah, he got into the end zone on that one. So that was like the strange thing, is that to start, like the start of that whole thing was being third and one, or, you know, being third and goal at the 1 yard line and having Baker throw when there were two very, very wide holes that like the linebackers weren't filling. He could have QB sneaked that thing right into the end zone.
Sure.
So there was that option. There was handing it off to Nick Chubb because, like we've talked about before, Nick Chubb averages about 4 yards a carry. He needed barely even 1 yard for that, which he would have easily gotten. So you're having Baker throw on third and goal, and it fails.
Sorry, like I just can't get over that.
Yeah, and then the next play, I think, was it Jarvis or was it Nick Chubb that had it? I don't know. One of them had it, but like. You could see that the ball, before he fumbled, the ball did look like it had crossed the plane. But then on the very next play, Nick Chubb actually does get into the end zone, but Freddie threw the red flag. And that's essentially like icing your kicker, except it's on your running back. Although, granted, I think that one of the reasons why he made it into the end zone was, you know, the defense obviously let up when they saw the challenge flag go down because they're like, oh, okay, well, play's dead. But that's just like such a weird thing. Like if I'm Nick Chubb, I'm looking at that and I'm like, I am in the end zone. That was the touchdown right there. I mean, and I guess Freddie had to have felt so confident that that play would have been ruled a touchdown for him to throw the challenge flag like that. Like that's really frustrating. And this is why I feel like Freddie is in over his head, because if you've got, you know, Chad, the investment banker who, you know, watches the game at the bars on the weekend, can look at that and say, that's not what you do. Like, I think anyone who watches 5 minutes of football in their life would look at a team with a running back like Nick Chubb, and when they're at third and goal, they would not call a passing play on that. So it's like,
no,
you know, like it's one of those things where it feels so obvious. So why is Freddie not going for, like, why is Freddie not doing that? And so it feels like he's getting too cute. Feels like he's overmatched and a little bit in over his head, and I am losing a lot of confidence in him. I mean, well, yeah, I know I said I trusted him. Yeah, I know I said I trusted him on the injury front, but everything else is just so questionable.
Yeah, you see the way he reacts to things too. Like he looks like he's getting more emotional week by week, and like, you know, it just looks like he's looking at this team and he's like, okay, I don't really know exactly what I'm doing. But if you don't, then go to people who do. Like, why are you still calling the plays? If this is something that, you know, we can all, like, we all look at and say, hey, you know what, Freddie, maybe you're not the best at this. Like, why are you still doing it? I don't get it.
I mean, it's almost like Hugh Jackson syndrome here where, I mean, you know, well, to be fair, Hugh Jackson did a pretty decent job at calling plays when he was the offensive coordinator with the Bengals the first time. Before he came to Cleveland, he didn't do a terrible job in Cincinnati. But, you know, that was the one thing every single week was, hey, why are you still calling? I'm going to call plays. But it's starting to look like when you look at the team and the talent that we have right now versus the team and the talent we had under Hugh Jackson, it almost feels like, and I've said this before and I've said this to you, where you had someone like DeShone Kizer who was pretty much set up to fail. Hugh Jackson may have been set up to fail a little bit, because I'm looking at this team and I hate myself for thinking this, but it's like if Hugh Jackson was coaching this game or this team, I don't know that they would be 2-4. Like they might be 500 going into this, just, you know, based on experience and play calling experience. So
you know what's interesting? I was talking to my dad the other day and we were talking about like how bad the Dolphins and the Redskins are, right?
Painful. And they played each other today. It was Bowl.
That's why we were like going through the picks and was like, okay, we get to, you know, Washington versus Miami. I'm like, take your pick. But then we started talking about the Browns. You know, if you look at that 2017 season, I don't think they ever got blown out. Like they lost every game, obviously, but like most of the games they stuck around for like all of it. And I'm in no way defending Hugh Jackson ever.
Yeah, I'm not
like,
gonna
I won't
Hugh
do
Jackson
it
either. I won't. Yeah, it was just it was a bad choice. It was not good.
Yes, the funny thing about this current Browns team is that there are times like when they played the Ravens, that game they looked like they could beat anyone. Like anyone. They just looked so
incredible.
Good.
We were then, so positive after that game. It was so exciting.
Yes. But then you look at, you know, the games, you know, especially against the 49ers, and you're like, this looks like they couldn't even beat like Miami right now. So they have to find
some sort of
balance.
Which we do play Miami after the bye week. I'm almost nervous for that game.
Can you imagine if we lose that game?
Oh, my God.
Although we won't. We're not.
Okay.
Guys, we're not.
I feel like losing to Miami this year might be worse than going 0-16. Although, what was it? Who did the Browns beat in, 2015, where they went 1-15? and they like won a game on New Year's Eve. Do you remember who they beat in that game?
I don't. I didn't get to watch a lot of Browns games then because I was still in North Carolina.
Oh, okay. I was still in Tennessee that year. So I missed that, but I don't remember. But that's like, but that'll be like, if that happens, that'll be like the Browns. If they have, that's like the one win that Miami has right. against the Browns. Absolutely. That'll be embarrassing and awful. That it,
I don't know how they'd be able to recover from that.
Nope.
We'll be looking at that 49ers loss like, well, you know what, guys? It really wasn't that bad.
I think Browns fans might go into witness protection if that happens. I mean,
honest to God, after the Browns, like, you get on Twitter afterwards, these people are, like, basically Savage. About to jump off buildings. Savage, and they want to fire everyone and turning on everyone. And you know, I'm not saying that it's not allowed. And somebody said that, they're like, oh, what are we allowed to blame? You can blame whatever you want. I said, this isn't North Korea, guys. You could do whatever you want. I don't care. But like, if I'm trying to be positive on here, maybe don't come into my mentions and start yelling at me about it. I have people telling me to shut up and just rude stuff. Because I'm trying to be nice and positive, Meredith.
Twitter is a scary place. So I have an analogy for Freddie Kitchens, which I teased to you before the podcast, but I didn't tell you because I want to get your genuine reaction.
I want to hear. I love analogies. Right, unless they're here. Gross.
It's not gross, I promise.
Thank you.
I think you know me better than that, Brittany. Come on.
Well.
So, I mean, I know I'm a little gross, and it's because I work with dudes all day, every day. So it rubs off sometimes, but I promise. But
it's fine. I love you.
I love you, too. So I wanted to get your honest, genuine reaction to this analogy for Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield and their relationship. So, before I get to my analogy on Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield, I wanted to tell you a little bit about ShipStation. If you are a business owner and you fulfill orders online, or if you are selling your product online, getting your orders out can be a real pain. It's time consuming, it's expensive, and there are so many carriers to choose from. And most of the time, you don't even know if you're making the best choice in terms of shipping out your orders. That's why you need ShipStation. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. ShipStation helps you get out orders quickly, it saves money on shipping costs, and it keeps your customers happy. And it doesn't matter whether you're selling on Amazon, on Etsy, or if you have your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface, making them as really easy to manage, and you can do it from any device, even your cell phone. ShipStation works with all major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, UPS, and Amazon Fulfillment. So you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customer. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. And right now, listeners to the Rebuild Podcast can try ShipStation for free for 60 days when you use offer code BLUE. That's BLUE. There's no risk. You can start your free trial without even entering your credit card information. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone on the top of the homepage, and type in the code word BLUE, BLUE. That's ShipStation.com, offer code BLUE. ShipStation.com, make ship happen. So I also wanted to talk a little bit about Axios, because there are so many ways to keep on what's happening in the world of sports, whether you're trying to keep track of Baker's interceptions or OBJ's receptions. There's a lot to follow, especially if you are a multi-sport fan. If you want to follow the baseball playoffs, if you want to follow what's going on in the world of hockey, the basketball preseason has kicked off. How are you supposed to read every article? And how are you supposed to watch every single highlight without losing time in your busy day? Scrolling through every app, visiting every website on a daily basis is damn near impossible. That's where Axios Sports comes in. Axios Sports is a modern sports page delivered directly to your email inbox. Every morning, you'll see the best stories from around the sports world, from the NBA to the NFL. And you know what? They even have niche sports like cricket and ping pong. The email newsletter highlights the most important stats and trends, giving you the ability to stay informed. It's super simple to sign up. All you have to do is visit sports.axios.com. I visited, I signed up. It was one of the best things I did for my sports consuming habits. It's absolutely fantastic. It's clean, it's crisp. It gives you everything you need to know. You can read it in 5 minutes on the elevator, or you can go into a deep dive in an article while you're on the train to work, or on the metro, or if you have some time during your day and you want to deep dive on an article, they've got it all right in the newsletter for you.
Not only will you be caught up, you'll be the cool person at the water cooler, sharing an amazing link with all of your friends and coworkers. Join the hundreds of thousands of sports fans who get caught up on the day before it even begins. Best of all, there's no paywall, no subscription fee, nothing. It's free, curated sports content delivered directly to you. Do yourself a favor and sign up for Axios Sports for free at sports.axios.com. I know it makes me feel more informed without spending tons of time clicking through countless amounts of websites, apps, social media platforms. I love it. It is for the low, low price of free 99, again, at sports.axios.com.
Freddie Kitchens is the head coach of the Cleveland Browns because of Baker Mayfield. Like, I think we can all, I mean, no one's ever going to come out and say it, but I think we can all pretty much agree that Freddie was Baker's choice. Freddie sure. was Baker's guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that Baker had a lot more say in the decision than John Dorsey is ever willing to admit. Mm-hmm. And I just think that Freddie Kitchens is the boyfriend that's bad for Baker. I really think that is. And I think that's because you and I have both had that guy, more than one guy, like the guy that all of our friends are telling us, you need to dump him. You need to dump him. He's not good for you. And you're like, no, I love him. He's perfect. He is my guy. And I think that is Baker and Freddie right now. And I think that it's, you know, Freddie and Baker have a great relationship. They do love each other. But I just don't think that Freddie is right for Baker. And I think at some point, I don't know that Freddie will survive this year. And if he does, I don't think he's going to be the head coach next year. I think that he's on extremely thin ice right now. So when we do get to the point where Freddie gets cut and John Dorsey kind of puts his foot down and you know, dad makes the decision on who you're going to date and who you're going to marry, Baker might look back on Freddie and say, you know what? We had a really wild and exciting relationship, but you know, maybe he was wrong for me.
No, I think that's great. And you know, there's a, obviously we're past the honeymoon phase, which with any bad boyfriend you have that, and that's when you know everything's, it's so great and you're like, okay, like, yeah, I dated this guy and he was like homeless when I dated him. And, like, I gave him a house and, like, you know.
You're a much better person than I am.
But, like, oh, and everyone hated him. My family, you know, they didn't want to come see me because of him. And, you know, but to me, I was like, oh, no, he's super smart. Like, blah, blah, blah. Everything will be fine. He'll figure it out. Well, you know what, Baker? He never figured it out. And it caused my life a lot of grief.
Yes, you're so yes. off. When you're in these bad relationships, you know, you're not the same person. Your friends will right. tell you, your family will tell you, and that could be it. Because that's, you know, one of the things I was talking to one of my colleagues about earlier this evening. He even said the same thing. He's like, Baker looks off and I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I think it's the bad relationship. And I'm not saying that Freddie Kitchens is a bad person because he's not. No. I just think that he wasn't ready. And he's in over his head and he's trying to just do things that aren't going to work for this team because, and I said it on this podcast so many times, I've said it multiple times just right now while we're recording that this team is too talented to be right. 2-4. And I think it comes down to coaching. And, you know, Freddie did say after the game, you know, it's also about execution and he's not wrong about that, but at the same time, you have to call executable plays.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, like it's yeah. just, you know, I mean, and there are a few things like, you know, when you have easy catches that, you know, that are dropped, I want to say, was it Damian Ratley that dropped a pass from OBJ or something like that when they tried to do one of those trick plays and you know some of those things happen like there were a few times where that OBJ missed today where he really should have gotten it and Baker was talking about it after the game. I think he was trying to here's the thing is I think this is sort of one of the mistakes that Baker made is that he was trying to will OBJ away from some of the defenders and so I think he was trying to throw the ball into an open space but OBJ wasn't prepared for it and that's like one of those ones where like that one whiff that you saw that went behind OBJ I think that's what Baker was trying to do was he was trying to throw the ball into the open space in the hopes that OBJ could catch it but you know he's on a route in the other direction well not like quote unquote not completely in the other direction but you know he's running a route that's not going to put him right in that spot so you know, you can put the ball into open space, but if there's nobody there to catch it, even when you're one of the best receivers in the league, like Odell Beckham Jr. is, you know, it's just, it's not going to get caught. So, you know, I just think that, you know, while Freddie Kitchens says executable, 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 there's got to be something. And I think that was what's so, I think that's what makes this game so much more disappointing than anything, is because we've seen flashes of brilliance, because we saw that flash of brilliance against the Ravens, because that was the game that you expected from the Cleveland Browns. That was a game where the offense was firing on all cylinders. That was the game where your defense was firing on all cylinders. Just everybody was working together and it looked perfect. And it was like, that was the Cleveland Browns that everyone was expecting in the preseason. And then you put up a clunker against the 49ers on Monday Night Football. And then what made this one even more painful is the very first drive, you get a touchdown. Like, you get this massive return from Jarvis, and, you know, Baker only has to march the football like 26 yards to get it into the end zone on the first play of the game. And so it starts with just high hopes, and it wasn't quite downhill from there, because there were a lot of other great things that happened in the game after that. But that's just like one of those things where it's like greatness against the Ravens. I don't know what the heck is going on against the 49ers. And then you come in on the very first play of the game against the Seahawks today, and it's looking like the Browns that played against the Ravens 2 weeks ago. And
yeah,
I think that's what made this loss so much harder.
Yeah, this one hurt because it was a very winnable game. They came out fierce. They looked really good. And
they led almost the entire game too.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't.
And we're at home. It was at home in front of the
home. And
we
haven't
crowd.
Won at home yet, have we?
Oh, so many things.
Ooh, we have not won at home.
0-3 at home.
That stinks.
0-3 at home.
Ooh.
Yes.
And
you
also,
know, and Baker wants
the home crowd to show up.
Home crowd to show up, and he wants the crowd to be loud, which is fair, because I know that that helps encourage the team. You know, that'll help drive the team when they have their fans behind them. But it also gets very, very hard to sell when you're playing the way that you are, you know. Yeah. And I mean, and granted, this product on the field is 10 times better, a million times better than the product on the field when the Browns were 0-16. But even so, you know, it's very, very tough to sit at First Energy Stadium and watch your team give up a lead the way the Browns gave it up today. And, you know, when you had the opportunities to score, there are a lot of points left out on the field today by the Browns. Yeah. And it's hard. So, I mean, I understand where Baker's coming from, because they want the support of their hometown team. But then I also understand where the fans are coming from when they're looking at this and saying, you know, I'm more comfortable watching this game at home, or, you know, I'd rather, you know, go to the bar for half the game and then go home. You know, it's, yeah, you know, it's a lot, especially, and I don't think people in Cleveland understand and realize this, but if we have any listeners outside of the Cleveland area, hi, hello, thank you for listening. But Cleveland, the surrounding suburbs that are Cleveland Browns fans and consider themselves part of Cleveland, are massive and spread out. Like, there are suburbs within like the greater Cleveland area, but that could be 45 minutes outside of downtown. Mm-hmm. And so for the people who live out in the far east suburbs, or even for people who live in, say, like Canton or Akron, which, you know, are their own cities, but they love the Browns, like, it's a lot for them to drive into Cleveland to go to First Energy Stadium. So it's like, you've really got to give them something worthwhile. Baker, you know, you have to make that person who
poor
might be
Baker.
You know, if you're coming in from, I don't know, Youngstown or Akron or Ashtabula, like one of these suburbs that are just cities that are just very far out from Cleveland, you know, you got to make that drive in worthwhile for them.
For sure. And you know what? 11 interceptions through 6 games. Let's talk about that stat.
Yes.
We just saw this before we came.
Yes, you brought
Baker
that stat
Mayfield
up to me.
Yeah, let's talk about this, because I'm going to tell you, like, at the beginning when he was, you know, throwing picks, and I looked up stats and compared it to another quarterback's through his first 15 or 16 games, whatever it was, and they weren't that far off, but it felt like they were. I'm just going to tell you, of course, I was comparing him to Kaiser, and it was only because, you know,
very on brand for you.
Only because everyone knows that Kaiser, he was a turnover machine. Like, anytime he was in the red
especially
zone,
especially in the red zone,
pick,
yes,
pick, pick.
Oh my
yes
God.
It was awful. It was like so predictable. It was the most predictable part, and that's the thing that everyone remembers about him, and, you know, totally warranted. I'm not defending that in any way, but this was an interesting stat, because even though Baker has a lot, to me it still doesn't feel as heavy as it did back then. So it said He has 11 interceptions through six games, and that's the most by a Browns quarterback through six games since Paul McDonald in 1984.
Oh my God.
I know.
That hurts.
To me, that blows my mind because it, and maybe it's because, well, not so much this year, but like last year, he threw a good number of picks last year, but like it didn't feel that way because he made up for it with touchdowns too. You know, it balanced out. But like this year, it's starting to feel heavier with every game. And let me just say, it's not always his fault. You know, a lot of these things, they're tipped or, you know, sometimes he's just a victim of circumstance, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of things, he can be unlucky at times. So I'm not going to say it's all on his fault. Maybe that's also why it doesn't feel like all these interceptions he's thrown, but still.
Yeah, I didn't realize that he had that many interceptions until you brought that stat up, which was mind-boggling. But like going back and looking, I was like, yeah, that's a lot. Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know what his problem is. And maybe, you know, I'm not going to say anything. It's not Freddie's fault. But they also had that quarterback's coach. And remember when, who was it? Bob Wiley, when he got released or whatever. And he said the reason Baker was so successful last year had a lot to do with
Ken Zampezi.
Yes. It had a lot to do with him. And now he's gone. I don't know if there was any truth to that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so. So I found this stat that goes along with your Baker stat. It's the stats of worst quarterback turnover luck, which means the amount of interceptions versus turnover-worthy passes. Top three, number one, Baker Mayfield with 5, and then tied at second, Russell Wilson and Jimmy Garoppolo with 1.
Wow.
Yeah.
5-1, jeez.
So I mean, right now Baker is a little bit of a turnover machine, which is not something you want to see. So I mean, something's got to change. And then one other thing that we can talk about, hopefully this won't make us too angry, but we can talk about the officiating in this game, because I feel like we'd be remiss to have a podcast after a game like that and not talk about the officiating.
Yeah.
And I said this to you before we started recording, that I hate being the blame the refs person. I feel like it's low-hanging fruit. When you have a talented team, when you are good, great teams are never in situations where a bad call can ruin the game. And I've seen that happen on the college level. You see it happen on the NFL level. Like the Saints-Rams game last year is always a prime example of just really bad officiating. But it just feels so much worse for the Browns sometimes. And, you know, we're looking at these plays, especially that one play that Jarvis got called for where they called an illegal blindside block. But, like, he was literally looking the defender in the eyes. So unless the defender himself was blind, I don't know how that's considered an illegal blindside block. So it's just
terrible.
And then, after the game, Freddie said that he's not going to comment because he got a memo, which he got a memo. And then Baker did the same thing where he said, well, I'm not going to comment, but actually I am. I'm probably going to get fined. You saw that game. It was not good. And then in the locker room afterwards, I want to say it was, oh gosh, I'm blanking on who it was, but one of the defensemen kind of voiced his opinion without actually calling out the refs. Cause that's the thing, is it? And I get it. Because technically these players and these coaches are employees of the NFL. The referees are also employees of the NFL. So for them to come out and criticize the refs is also criticizing the organization that employs you. So I understand it, because like neither of us would come out and, you know, say bad things publicly against our employers like that, because those are fireable offenses. So I understand the fine. But, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like there is so much at stake. People's jobs are at stake. There's a lot of money at stake with legalized gambling. There's, you know, with fantasy football.
Sure, absolutely.
With, you know, and I think really, you know, just I think the biggest thing is the idea of people's jobs being at stake, because, you know, coaches lose their jobs. Quarterbacks get cut. Like, people lose their jobs because they don't win games. And you just can't have an officiating crew that just seems to be so clueless when their calls could cost somebody their jobs, you know? And it's just like, it's a very frustrating thing to see. And I just don't know what the solution is, because I know the NFL has tried to fix this before by, I don't know, making them full time, making them go through clinics. Like, I don't know what, but I you know, and also part of the bad officiating could just be the rules that get changed every year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just one of those things where I don't know how I am so torn about this, because I want to complain about it so badly, but I also realize complaining about officiating is low hanging fruit, and I hate being, you know, low hanging fruit sports person. So
yeah, no, I feel the same way. I'm usually never one to complain about that. You know, today I tweeted at NFL officials and told them they owe us all a beer for that one.
Do you want a beer, yeah, or a White Claw, or both?
Oh, a White Claw. But, you know. But no, that was especially terrible. Today was a rough one. And while I was sitting, I was at O'Donnell's in Youngstown at the Browns backers bar, which was a good time. But I was sitting there with my friend, and he said, why don't officials have to have press conferences after games and answer questions? Wouldn't that be something?
That'd be really interesting. You know, I never even thought about that, but...
Yeah, coaches and players, you know, they're employees of the NFL. Well, so are the officials. Why can't they sit at a panel and, you know, be open to questions from the media after games and answer for themselves? Because one of the things that really bothers me is that these players and coaches, they'll get fined, or, you know, they'll get in trouble if they speak out or try to, you know, question the officials in any way. Do the officials get in trouble for anything? Do they get fined for, you know, not doing their job well? Do they, like...
I don't know. I think that there was one instance last year, I think, of a ref that did get fired, I want to say. But it's very, very rare, I believe, when to see a ref actually face repercussions. Most of the time, you know, and the NFL officials, or I guess, like, the head of the officiating crew will, like, come out on Monday morning and say, oh, yes, we did make that mistake, and mm-hmm. apologize for it. But it's like... it's spilled milk at that point, especially when it was a botched call that cost the game. It's tough. And you know what? I love that idea. Yes. Can we make that happen?
That's a great idea. It doesn't have to be a long, you know, super intense thing. Just ask them questions like you would ask Freddie Kitchens or Baker Mayfield.
They're never really that long, you know, in the first place. I mean, Freddie spoke for a pretty decent amount of time today, but that's the one thing that I do appreciate about Freddie, is that he's willing to give time, because you'll have... you know, the PR with the Browns trying to, you know, limit the time, which is understandable. That's their job. Yeah. You know, they're like their biggest responsibility is sort of being like the handlers for the coaches and the players. So you'll have the PR staff that, you know, are doing their jobs and saying, okay, you know, we're going to cut it off here, but Freddie will just keep talking. Like, there have been multiple times in not just post-game press conferences, but like midweek press conferences, where you can hear them in the background trying to sort of say, okay, time to end the press conference, and Freddie will talk for like another 6 minutes. So mm-hmm. and I appreciate about them, I appreciate the candidness and his willingness to talk like that, but I love the idea of having an officials press conference. And honestly, like, I think they should. I think some of them should be, because, like, here's the thing, is that if Freddie has to field questions about officiating, which he did, mm-hmm. Baker had to field questions about officiating, and then when you mm-hmm. go into the locker room, all of the players that spoke to the media in the locker room had to field questions about officiating. So, like, why are they, like, you know, it's like if one of your coworkers screws up on something and then your boss comes to you about it and you have to answer for it. Like, that's really kind of what's
And you can't say anything negative or else you're going to get in trouble for it.
Yes. So
even if it impacted the outcome of, you know, let's say you're at work, the outcome of your project was negatively affected by something that someone else did. Well, I can't throw them under the bus. I can't even, like, question them in any way. I just have to say, well, you know, sorry, can't comment on that. Like, that's crap.
We need to figure out how to... Oh God, maybe that'll be in the next CBA. Maybe, like, I don't know anybody in the NFLPA, but maybe that'll be like my mission in the offseason, is to find someone within the NFLPA, make friends with them, and be like, hey, in this upcoming collective bargaining agreement, mm-hmm. NFL officials need to have press conferences, because they should, because I really do, because that's, and it's not just to sit there and berate them and yell at them for doing a bad job. That's not the purpose. A lot of times it's wanting to know what the thought process is behind it, because you could even see in the officiating today when they came on mic to call out the plays or to call out the penalties and what the results were, a lot of they seemed a little bit confused themselves. So I really would love to kind of, you know, have that press conference atmosphere where you can ask these questions and hopefully they would answer them, you know, somewhat honestly and be like, okay, hey, like, what was your thought process in mm-hmm. in calling an illegal blindside block on Jarvis Landry when he's, you know, looking the guy straight in the eyes. Like, yeah, what did you see? What did you see that we on the field, that we at home, that we in the press box didn't see?
Yes, or they can, you know, I know there's been a lot of changes in rules, and their jobs aren't easy. I'm not saying that at all, especially, you know, keeping up and keeping up to date with all these changes. And
I don't even know what a catch is anymore, Brittany.
Right, like it's all so convoluted now.
Nobody knows what a catch is. Nobody knows what a touchdown is. Nobody just
yes.
It's very
you have to, like, you know, trust these people to an extent, but like maybe they can educate us on some things too. Like, I just think it's an all around good idea. We know more. We get more information. They can explain themselves. They're held accountable. Like, I don't know why this isn't a thing yet.
It might be the best idea I've heard in a very long time.
Yeah. I wish I could take full credit.
Aside from having you on the Rebuild this week, best idea I've heard in a long time. But I think that's going to be where we end the Rebuild. I don't know if we're going to have an episode next week or not because of the bye week, but we'll see if we do. You know, keep an eye out. You can find me on Twitter at MK on Sports. You can find Brittany on Twitter at Bird's Eye View. And if I were you, I'd keep an eye on Brittany because I think there's some big things coming.
Ooh.
Big things coming. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Brittany. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you. I love you, Meredith.
I love you too. So I ended last week's podcast with On to Seattle. So I'm going to end this week with On to the Bye Week. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to The Rebuild on iTunes, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe to every other podcast we have within the Blue Wire Network. Thanks for listening. On to the bye week.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.